O thou that dwellest on high, and who hast bestowed thy favor so abundantly upon us, do thou grant that our response may ever be one of gratitude, of faith, of love, and of new obedience. And in the fullness of understanding, may we abound in the fruit of the Spirit, in love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance, against which there is no law. In Jesus' name, amen.
Now we're beginning with the subject of imputation, the imputation that is sin, second main subdivision of our doctrine of sin. And our study is to a very large extent focused in the exposition of Romans 5, 12 through 19. And the first subdivision of that is the syntactical construction of the passage. Do you all have your Greek testaments today? Yes. Better take them out. Look at them. It is quite obvious that verse 12 in Romans 5:12, is an unfinished comparison. It begins with whose hair, and that always points to comparison. But the comparison isn't completed. Because at the middle of the verse, you don't have hutos kai, but kai hutos. And kai hutos doesn't close a comparison, but carries on the comparison. And you have even in this chapter examples. Verses 15 18 19 and 21 Kai hutos is coordinated and means and in like manner, whereas hutos kai means even so. Now when you have a finished comparison, you have what is called a prothesis, and then a prothesis. The first part
of the comparison is the focus. What follows, who calls Kai, in this verse, you have a process introduced by both men. And you have that process continued in what follows. Kai Bhutan. You have no apodosis corresponding to Holster and Kai Uto. No apodosis corresponding to these two conjunctions. Now we ask the question, why do you have that kind of syntax? The reason is very obvious. It is characteristic of Paul's style. In parentheses, so here after verse 12 you have a parenthesis, and that parenthesis continues until verse 17. And the reason is that the datum expressed or intimated in the last clause of verse 12 required the apostle to required that the apostle explain that particular clause, namely in that all sin. Now it is highly probable that this parenthesis extending from verse 13 through 17 is not one parenthesis but a double parenthesis. And that verses 13 and 14 are directly related to the last clause in verse 12. And verses 15 through 17 directly related to the last clause in verse 14. In the last clause of verse 14, you have
a typological datum, namely that Adam is the type of the one to come. And having stated that typological datum, the apostle was required to develop its implications. Develop the similarities, but also the contrasts. He involved in the fact that Adam is the type of Christ. Apostle Paul began with the thesis of a certain comparison. He did not at that point provide the apodosis. Because a parenthesis was necessary in order to expand some of the implications of the protest. In this passage, he does not supply us with the apodosis of verse 12 in the precise terms which the prophetess would have required. But at verse 18 he returns to the type of construction which he began in verse 12. He returns to that type of construction and provides us with a finished comparison. That is a comparison with both protists and apodists. And that same type of comparison is continued, and that same type of comparison with the same kind of construction is continued in verse 19. So in verses 18 and 19, you have this completed comparison. And at the middle of each verse, you have Kutos Kai. Kutos Kai. That type of conjunction, that type of construction that would close comparison. Hence, on the basis of verses 18 and 19, we can conclusively determine what the apodosis of verse 12 would have been if Paul had not interrupted
sequence of his thought by inserting this parenthesis, or preferably these parentheses. Premature at this particular point to say what that hypothesis would have been if it had been supplied in the exact term of the hypothesis. But nevertheless, as we shall discover later on, it would be very easy to supply what the hypothesis. And it would begin with Uto's car. Are so and so is true, so even so, something else. Now, at first glance, this parenthesis verses 13 through 17. Seems very perplexed to us. It was very awkward. But after all, when we examine the whole passage, it is this parenthesis that is more significant and eloquent for the interpretation of what on all accounts is the pivotal clause in this whole passage. At least as far as our present interest is concerned. The pivotal clause in this whole passage, the last clause in verse 12, Epho Panthes Hemarton. And if we do not rightly understand the reference in that clause, the whole doctrine of the apostle in this passage is missed. And not only do we fail to understand the relation of Adam to the race, but we also fail to understand the relation of Christ to his redeemed.
Well, that is the syntax.
Now we come to the second main subdivision of study.
And this is concerned with the sin contemplated, that's simply entitled,
the sin contemplated.
And this has particular reference
to the last clause in verse 12, F.O. Panthes Hemar,
in that all sin.
In that all sin. F.O.
Is that? Conjunctival expression.
It's not a relative expression.
Paul doesn't say en ho. En ho, panthes hemarton, in whom all sin,
which he could very well have used if that were his precise thought.
But there, all planters came on top. And F.O. has the force of conjunction and means in that. If you would expand it, it would be epic, tuto, hoti, upon this that. Epic, tuto, hoti, upon this that. And that expansion would mean on the ground of the fact that, on the ground of the fact that the abridged expression at all simply means in that, and has the force of our conjunction because.
Now there is no need to try to demonstrate that significance of F.O. because there is practically unanimous agreement among entities at present time, for a long time also, to that effect. It is perfectly true, as a matter of Paul's teaching, that all sinned in us. All sinned in Adam.
And consequently, the clause, in whom all sinned, is of itself correct. But that is not the precise thought of the apostle here. Very deliberately use this causal conjunction. Causal conjunction. Because it gives the reason why death penetrated to all men. Later on in this passage, he will make clear that it is the reason also why condemnation passed upon all men. And also why it can be said that all sinned in the sin of Adam. Now, what is meant by in that all sin, or because that all sin, or on the ground of the fact that all sin? So, what does this panther, Hamartan, refer? No exegetical question in this passage that is more important. This is the pivotal question. Not only exegetically, but from the standpoint of historical theology. And when I say historical theology, I bring it right up to date. Because the burning question in present day theology, because of the dialectic influence, the burning question in present day theology is, what did Paul mean when he said, Panthers came out? Now, that form, the
as a matter of form, could very well refer to the actual sins of all men. If Paul meant the actual sins of all men, there is no other expression that would have been more suitable. I say, if he actually meant the actual sins of all men, no other expression would have been more suitable to express that thought than Pantes Haemartos. But the question is not to be determined by grammatical possibilities, but by contextual considerations. Contextual considerations. So we have to deal with the various views that have been propounded respecting this particular cross, Apopantis Haemartos. And you first of all have, and a big one, you have the Pelagian view. Now that was the view propounded by Pelagius himself. Was that this refers to the actual sins of all men. The actual sins of all men. And so the verse means on that supposition that as Adam sinned and therefore died, so in like manner all men sin and they likewise die. Perfect parallel between Adam and all men. And Adam is simply the prototype, perfect parallel between Adam and all men. And Adam is simply the prototype, after whose pattern all other men die. They follow his example, and therefore they die. Now, this is not a 4th century or 5th century doctrine. It was 4th and 5th century doctrine, but regrettably it's not confined to 4th century or 5th century reading. The current exegesis of this clause is after the Pelagian pattern. Now, it never entered into Pelagius' mind. Never entered into Pelagius' mind that Genesis 2 and 3 were mythical, or that they were legendary. He believed in the historical Adam, according to the Genesis account. But today, in the dialectic way of thinking, on the assumption that Genesis 3 is just mythical, Genesis 2 and 3 are mythical or legendary. Adam is regarded simply as the typical man. Adam may never have existed, he may never have existed, but Genesis 2 and 3 describe. But Adam is every man. He's all of us. We are all Adam. And Adam, in that sense, is simply a typical. This is simply the typical man. And on that basis, Romans 5:12b is what is interpreted as referring to the sins that all men commit. And also, the dialectic theology went on an entirely different biblico-theological basis, or an entirely different biblico-theological perspective. Nevertheless, exegetically, it belongs to the category of the Pelagian exegesis. Well, we're all that. And that is what is expressed in their whole passage here. So you see, we are dealing not with this from the standpoint of historical theology, but we are also dealing with from the standpoint of a crucial interest at the present time. Well, now, the Pelagian exegesis is that therefore Pandas here might on refer to the sins of all men. Is that the utensil? Now, it has sometimes been thought, and I find my students again and again falling into that error. The syntax of verse 12 cannot be pleaded as a refutation of the Pelagian view. Cannot be pleaded as a refutation of the Pelagian view. Pelagius himself is fully aware of the construction of verse of Romans 5:12. And the Latin text with which he was dealing. The Latin text with which he was dealing was, in this respect, a proper rendering of the Greek text. The syntax is not a refutation, because, although verse 12 is not a finished comparison, nevertheless there is in it a subordinate comparison, or a coordinate comparison. And if the Pelagian view were correct, Paul could still have written verse 12 precisely as he did write it. Because in that instance, the comparison intimated in huto, the comparison intimated in the second part, beginning with kai huto, would be a comparison between the entrance of sin and death and the passing on of sin and death. And that is what Pelagius maintained. That as sin and death entered through one man, both sin and death continue through the sins of all men, through the sin of all men. So neither grammar of Pantheismarchon nor the synthesis of the passage refute the Pelagian exegesis. Can't refute it on the basis of grammar or syntax. But nevertheless, there are actual, exegetical, and theological objections to this Pelagian exegesis. Can be refuted conclusively on the basis of actual, exegetical, and theological considerations. Now, presentation of that Arabian thesis. Lowercase Roman 1, 2, 3, and 4. It is not factually true. Not factually true. Not all die because they actually sin. Infants die. But they have not transgressed after the similitude of Adam's transgression. That is to say, they have not personally and voluntarily transgressed a commandment of God. The reason being that they are not psychologically capable. They may die immediately after emergence from the mother's womb, or they may die in the mother's womb. But they suffer death. You see, in verse 14, as we shall notice in a moment, speaks of sinning after the similitude of Adam's transgression. Sinning after the similitude of Adam's transgression. The Pelagian exegesis is that all sin after the similitude of Adam's transgression. The dialectic, Barth and Grunow. The dialectic theology says the very same thing. Let all men sin after the similitude of Adam's transgression. But what about him? So there is an insuperable objection. From the standpoint of empirical fact. Now, second, there is now the exegetical, first exegetical argument. that in verses 13 and 14, Paul speaks the very opposite of the Pelagian exegesis. What does he say? Death reigned over those who did not sin after the similitude of Adam's transgression.
They're not sin after the similitude of Adam's transgression. Now it's not our concern now to determine the denotation.
To determine the denotation of those who Paul had in view.
That's not our interest. The question is the explicit statement that death reigned over certain persons who did not sin after the pattern of Adam's transgression. Now this bears directly upon the Pelagian exegesis. The Pelagian exegesis says the very opposite of what Paul says. And Paul says the very opposite of what the Pelagian exegesis says. Namely, that death reigned over certain persons who were in an entirely different category from that of Adam. Entirely described as who did not after the similitude of Adam's transgression. The third, the most conclusive refutation is again an exegetical one. Namely, that Paul says the very opposite of the Pelagian exegesis. Repeatedly in this passage. He says the very opposite repeatedly. He says that condemnation and death reigned over all men by reason of the one sin of the one man, Adam. Because that expression, the one sin of the one man Adam, emphasizes, as plainly as language can, the singularity of the sin. Whereas the Pelagian exegesis rests upon the untold plurality of sins, namely the sins of all, the actual sins of all men. And if Paul says
that the ground of the condemnation and death of all is the one sin of the one man, Adam. If he says that, he could not have used language more plainly in refutation of the Pelagian exegesis. That is exactly what Paul does. And he says it on five successive occasions in this passage. Five times in the parenthesis from verses 15 to... No, five times in the verses 15 through 19. Now remember that verses 15 through 17 are part of the parenthesis. Part of the parenthesis that is intended to explicate for us what he has said in verse 12. And verses 18 and 19 are the recapitulation of what he would have said in verse 12 if he had closed the confessor. So you see how relevant are the statements in verses 15 through 19 to the precise question at issue.